from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, President Trump granted clemency to 11 people, including former San Francisco 49ers owner Edward DeBartolo. DeBartolo was convicted of gambling fraud back in 1998. Coming up on Forum, we talk with a historian and legal scholar about Trump's pardons, which also included former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and former New York Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik. Then at 9:30, we discuss the Academy of Art University's troubling track record of low graduation rates and students leaving with huge debt and little to show for it. Join us next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, President Trump pardoned Eddie DeBartolo Jr., a former owner of the San Francisco 49ers. DeBartolo had been convicted back in 1998 of gambling fraud. The president granted clemency to a total of 11 people, including former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who had been convicted for essentially trying to sell a U.S. Senate seat. He also pardoned former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik, who served time for tax fraud and lying to federal investigators, and billionaire financier Michael Milken, who pleaded guilty to insider trading. We're going to be joined by a historian and a law professor to talk about President Trump's pardons. But first, I talked this morning with former San Jose Mercury News sports columnist Mark Purdy, who covered the DeBartolo trial, and asked him about the details of the case.
Eddie DeBartolo, at that time a longtime owner of the 49ers, in 1998, an investigation revealed that he had attempted to bribe Edwin Edwards, the governor, then governor of Louisiana, to obtain a riverboat casino license. And the feds were on to Eddie, and then Eddie agreed. They had wiretapped Eddie and the governor as Eddie attempted to bribe the governor for that riverboat license. And Eddie then agreed to turn state's witness and testified against the governor. I covered a bit of the trial in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, when Eddie was there to testify. And the testimony was largely credited with convicting the governor, who then was sentenced to a 10-year prison term, served 8 years of it. And after that, the NFL suspended Eddie DeBartolo for a year and barred him from running the team. Subsequently, the family, the DeBartolo family, had a meeting at which Eddie either proposed or agreed, that part's a little vague, to separate himself from the team and turn over ownership of the team to his sister, Denise DeBartolo, whose son, Jed York, now runs the team.
And so this was a $400,000 bribe, really, and it also not only affected the former governor of Louisiana going to jail, but also helped prosecute his son, but Eddie DeBartolo served no time at all, and actually is now in the Football Hall of Fame, right?
Right, yes. That piece of it was that as part of his guilty plea, the feds agreed not to sentence him to a prison term. He served, I believe, 2 years of probation and was fined. And separated himself, as I said, from pro football from that point. There was no question that as a owner, he belonged in the Hall of Fame for his achievements. The question was whether this episode would keep him out of the Hall of Fame in the minds of voters and people who decided that. But over the years, that discussion continued, and then he eventually was inducted in the Hall of Fame a few years ago.
What was your reaction to his being pardoned by President Trump?
I remember at the time, and I will say this, I mean, he admitted it was really stupid what he did. He never shied from saying, I really made a mistake. I don't know what I was thinking. And so I didn't know what that would mean in terms of a future pardon. I also know that he applied for a pardon from President George W. Bush and President Barack Obama, obviously did not receive one. Over the years, Eddie has contributed to both Republicans and Democrats. He's a very generous guy, as most 49ers fans know, in terms of supporting various charities, and especially is known for supporting the former players of the 49ers who may be in need. Eddie has contributed to the Trump campaign, or clearly he must have contributed a lot of money to the inaugural. Who knows when this was first started, when the discussion about this first started. So when it happened, I guess, knowing that the president is transactional, knowing that Eddie contributed money, I guess I wasn't stunned or surprised.
That was former San Jose Mercury News sports columnist Mark Purdy. And joining us now to talk about President Trump's pardons is Barbara Perry, Presidential Studies Director at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. Welcome, Barbara Perry. Good to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
And we also want to welcome Mark Osler to the program, Professor of Law at the University of St. Thomas. Welcome, Mark Osler.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. And Professor Osler, let me begin with you, because in the wake of these pardons, there's a lot of questions about the proper use of pardons and clemency and where, if any, boundaries exist. There's certainly concern about the vetting process. President Trump has spoken about recommendations from friends and business associates. Are there any real guardrails in terms of who a president can pardon or the reasons and motives for those pardons?
There's very few. And the thing that's striking is that, you know, the Constitution got rid of most of the powers of kings, but retained this one. And as part of that, there are really very few restrictions on what the president can do. The president can, for example, pardon someone who has not yet been charged with a crime. That's what Ford did with Nixon. We've seen all kinds of uses in what some would view as misuses of it, but there hasn't been a serious challenge or, you know, as you put it, guardrails imposed. And it's questionable whether that could be done by the legislature or by the courts.
And Barbara Perry, the history of pardons goes all the way back to George Washington, doesn't it?
It does, to the father of our country. And, of course, we always look to him, first of all, as a paragon of virtue, but also as setting precedents in the presidency. And by my count, he had 16 pardons, and two including for treason, you know, very serious crime of treason in the Whiskey Rebellion of that era.
Is there an argument, though, that as time has progressed, and there's been certainly a vacillation in terms of the use of the pardons by different presidents, some use them more aggressively and some certainly not necessarily nearly as aggressively, but that executive power and executive privilege has made certainly a great deal of difference in terms of what the chief executive can do with pardons?
Well, it's certainly the case. Yes,
I'll
just jump in to say that we just did a President's Day feature on NPR about the growth of presidential power, and it has, particularly in the 20th century and particularly in from mid-century onward because of the Great Depression, World War II, and FDR having to have a lot of that power accrue to the office of the presidency, but also an increase in the bureaucracy of the executive branch. So the powers of the presidency generally have grown. But as Mark points out, you know, this is one of those powers that is explicit in the Constitution with very few, if any, limits, except that it has to be for a federal offense and it cannot be for impeachment. So a president cannot pardon someone who's been impeached.
But now you have a president who says essentially that he's the highest officer in the land when it comes to criminal justice. Mark Osler, how does that affect you as a former federal prosecutor?
Well, we've always understood that to be the attorney general. You know, at the same time, the president is the president of, the entire federal bureaucracy. He's the president of the Justice Department. But that's different than being the chief law enforcement official. And you know, talking about the history of it, too, that, you know, it's been less used in recent generations than previously. Herbert Hoover, who we think of as fairly conservative, employed clemency almost 1,200 times in just his 4 years in office. And, you know, we even have, if you want to look at a precedent for this particular grant of a pardon, think about George Steinbrenner, who was convicted of campaign misdeeds relating to Nixon and was given pardon by President Reagan.
And I wonder if I could just follow that up with a question by contrast to President Obama. There were about 1,200 pardons, about 2,000 pardons that were put forward by President Obama, mostly for people who, well, for example, were serving long sentences for crack cocaine use or that sort of thing. I mean, it's quite a contrast. The president now seems to be strongly influenced by celebrities and business partners and those kinds of reasons.
That's correct. And with Obama, what we saw was about 1,700 commutations, which are shortenings of sentence, not the same as a pardon, but under the pardon power. Certainly, you know, what President Obama was after there was what he perceived as, and I think correctly, as a justice system that had unfair outcomes in drug cases and had unfair racial outcomes. You know, what President Trump cares about is celebrities. And, you know, it's not, there's no hide the ball here. There's a remarkable statement that was put out by the press secretary yesterday describing the clemencies and expressly saying, and listing the various celebrities who advocated for each person who received clemency. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
And Barbara Perry, President Gerald Ford, of course, pardoned President Richard Nixon, one of the more major pardons of our time, to be sure. But during the Ford administration, there was actually a clemency board, an 18-member clemency board, and some are saying it's really time to have something along those lines institutionally as part of the chief executive's office.
Right, and then there's also a pardon attorney in the Justice Department, the now much maligned Justice Department. And I think it's probably time to make sure that these processes are in place, but the very fact that we think it's necessary to have these processes in place, and I think the pardon attorney goes back to the 1950s, this is what Trump is all about, and that is not following process and saying to his base, I'm not following process because I'm draining the swamp. And then what an irony that he's pardoning people who are guilty of political corruption.
Well, let me bring our listeners into this. This is only a half-hour segment, so if you have a question or a comment, now would be the time to call us, and you can give us a call at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Join us now at that toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. There was a remark by Bernie Sanders recently, and I wanted to get your reaction to it, if I could, Barbara Perry, that poor working-class kids are in jail for all kinds of non-violent drug, convictions of one sort or another, while clemency is granted, and I'm quoting Senator Sanders here, to tax cheats, Wall Street crooks, and billionaires, and corrupt government officials. That sounds pretty harsh, but it may be accurate as well, isn't it?
Well, I think it is accurate, and it's a truism. I mean, we would expect someone like Bernie Sanders to point to the class issues that are involved here. But again, I think he's put his finger on an accurate description of the difference, for example, between, as you say, Barack Obama creating a policy to try to bring justice where justice has not been had for people who are sentenced to very harsh penalties and that has a racial component to it. And then in this instance, the policy seems to be the promotion of corruption.
Well, what are your responses to these recent pardons? And in fact, we'd like to hear from you. We heard about the Eddie DiBartolo, just to keep it local. Pardon your reaction to that. I'd like to hear from listeners. And again, you can join us toll free at 866-733-6786. Here's a tweet. Let me go to you on this, if I could, Professor Osler. This is a listener who says, how was the exploitation of pardon powers not questioned when President Trump pardoned Sheriff Joe Arpaio?
Well, it was questioned. I mean, there was a wave of criticism of that. In terms of people discussing whether that was a responsible use of the pardon power, that discussion certainly happened. But, you know, here's something that the check on the pardon power is elections. And one of the things that's gone wrong is that when we're electing people and we're vetting them and we're deciding who to vote for, we never talk about how they'd use the pardon power. I've never heard that question come up at a debate. If Trump had been asked that, I'm sure he probably would have said, well, I'll count on people I know. I mean, and now we've got, a big debate coming up tonight. And I'd be shocked, but very happy, if they asked a question about how would you use clemency if you were the president. And that's partly on us. We need to ask that question.
Important point. And there's also a lot of speculation that perhaps President Trump was using the pardon of Eddie DiBartolo for political reasons, because Eddie DiBartolo is very popular in Northeast Ohio, and certainly the president needs Ohio to win another election. I'm wondering, though, Barbara Perry, if I can just go back to you for a second and get your response to the Clinton pardon of Mark Rich, which is an infamous pardon in many people's judgment, and it happened right at the end of his presidency, and that's been also a kind of pattern that many have been critical of.
Yes, and I always find that a bit disconcerting as well, that as the president is walking out the door issuing pardons, and therefore, to Mark's point about one check that we can use on a president who's in a first term and running for a second, that check can be to throw that person out if someone in the electorate, more people in the electorate, believe that he's misusing or abusing that power. But in addition to that, President Clinton also commuted his brother Roger Clinton's sentence for cocaine possession. So there were a couple that were quite controversial.
I'm going to read another tweet from Michael who says, I notice the media is lumping together commuted sentences and pardons. Trump lost 4 years off Blagojevich's 12-year sentence, apparently because Blagojevich's wife appeared frequently on Fox News. Does DiBartolo still deserve the stigma of a felony conviction? Well, I'll let that question hang, and I'll get a caller on here from Marin County. Jeremy, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to point out a reader response I read in the Times last night, which really caught my eye. Our leader is somewhat of a spiteful person, and it appears to me that that this could be such a simple thing as just an act of spite against the Justice Department, undoing a lot of their hard work. What do you think?
Well, we'll go to Mark Osler.
Yeah, he made that explicit. I mean, he noted in the Blagojevich case that Blagojevich was prosecuted by who he perceives as some of his own tormentors, the former U.S. attorney in Chicago and James Comey. So, as often is true with Trump, we don't have to scratch the surface very far to find out the motivation. He puts it right out there.
Yeah, Patrick Fitzgerald was also a close friend of James Comey's. And I'm wondering, since we're in the realm of speculating, you might have to ask the question about how much the president's motives had to do, again, with, setting things up for the possible pardoning of Roger Stone or Paul Manafort or others like that. Some thoughts from you, Mark Osler?
Well, it's surprising that if he was going to do that, that he hasn't done it already. That you have several of his associates and close friends who have been, in prison, and he hasn't freed them. Meanwhile, he's freed these characters like Michael Milliken. When people jump to that conclusion that Roger Stone's going to be next, maybe. But probably what's surprising isn't that he might do that; is that he hasn't done it already. Given that he has advantaged people like Rod Blagojevich.
And again, Mark Osler is professor of law at University of St. Thomas, a former federal prosecutor. And Nick is our next caller. Nick, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I am concerned about clemency in general. It seems to be overused, but certainly under the previous administration, it was used close to 2,000 times, 1,970 or something. So in comparison, this is hardly anything, even though I think most clemency is probably political in nature.
What about that argument, Barbara Perry, as you look back historically, most clemency is political in nature, as the caller says?
I would say, as I look down the list of all the people who have, or at least the most prominent people and prominent names of people who've been pardoned or granted commutations, it's sort of an interesting mixture, kind of a rogues gallery in some ways of people who are political and who've engaged in corruption, and that's both from Democrats and Republicans in the presidency. And then there are the historical figures like Ford, pardoning Tokyo Rose and Robert E. Lee, for heaven's sake, and restoring his rights posthumously. Alexander Hamilton talks in Federalist Paper 74 about the pardon power, interestingly enough. We went a lot to him for the impeachment, but I couldn't help but be struck by one sentence where he was talking about, should it be the president who's doing the pardoning as it is in this new Constitution, or maybe it should have been Congress. He said, it is not to be doubted that a single man of prudence and good sense is better fitted than the Congress. But I have have to focus there on prudence and good sense. So I would say it's a mixture. And the other thing that he points to is a president pardoning those who've engaged in rebellion. And so you have pardon of Confederates after the Civil War by Andrew Johnson. You have pardoning of the Vietnam War draft dodgers. So you do have this kind of sense of clemency and mercy and to try to bring us back together.
And somehow make those two work together as much as possible. But Mark Usler, lest we forget, governors have pardoning power as well.
They do, and the way that's employed varies widely. And it's not a blue-red thing. That some of the states that are the most productive and efficient at clemency are South Carolina, Arkansas, Georgia, whereas my home state of Minnesota is not very good, and Vermont's not very good. And it comes down to process. And you know, you were asking about this before. The federal process, the official process, has been broken for decades. It involves seven sequential steps, mostly in the DOJ. And right now there's a pipeline with over 13,900 cases just stagnating in there. And that is something that has to be addressed.
You mentioned a number of states, I think Arkansas, Georgia, Connecticut, and South Carolina. They actually have boards that try to decide, don't they? Or make recommendations. Yeah. Could that something like that be put in place federally? Why not?
Yes, it could. And in fact, one of my collaborators, Rachel Barco at NYU, and I have pushed that idea. We've actually met with the president's people, with Jared Kushner, to suggest that they adopt such a system. And you'll notice that in several of the Democratic platforms, they embrace that idea.
And here's a listener, Curtis, who writes, pardons are a presidential prerogative. A pardon doesn't change the character of the person. And a tweet from Kevin, did everyone who was pardoned donate to Trump's campaign? Do we know the answer to that, Barbara Perry?
I don't. Perhaps Mark does.
Do you know,
I
Mark?
I am absolutely certain they didn't all, because some of the people that they're, down at the bottom of the list, we've got Tynese Hall, Crystal Munoz, who are people who were doing long drug sentences and were commuted out of prison. And though some of the higher profile people may have, I'm fairly certain they did not.
He also, I was just going to mention, President Trump pardoned a woman who had a long drug sentence, but at the recommendation of Kim Kardashian. So, again, there's a celebrity factor there.
Mm-hmm. And Alice Johnson.
And Rob Blagojevich was also on Celebrity Apprentice, but as you had a good deal of effect on the president because of his wife speaking out on Fox News.
Yeah, I mentioned that official process with the seven sequential steps. It seems that right now we have a one-step process, which is, from Fox News to the president's ear.
Well, we will obviously continue to cover this story, but I'd like a final word from you, Barbara Perry, on how all this fits into the whole perspective of the presidency.
Right. Well, we haven't brought up Bush 43, and I'll just end on that note. By my count, I see that he had about 200 total pardons, commutations in his 8 years in office. And the most famous one, or infamous, depending on one's political view, was the Scooter Libby, that he had been asked by Dick Cheney as they were leaving office to pardon Scooter Libby. And the president refused to do it. He commuted the sentence, but he refused to pardon him. And I always thought that that was a mark of courage on the part of Bush 43. Turns out that Donald Trump pardoned Scooter Libby.
Yeah. So where do we stand in terms of presidential power as a result of this? We're pretty much where we've always been, or has anything turned?
Well, I think that while some people quite correctly are concerned about Trump's use of it, he's using it much more sparingly than some previous presidents. But I think it is part and parcel of this accrual of power to all presidents, but particularly this one, it's more disturbing because of the authoritarian streak that he seems to have across the board.
Thank you, Barbara Perry, Presidential Studies Director, University of Virginia's Miller Center. And thanks also to Mark Osler, Professor of Law, University of St. Thomas, and a former federal prosecutor.